From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, October 11th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
As Maine residents face challenges getting in at the doctor's office, some school districts are bringing providers into schools, making it easier and faster for students to access care. As Caitlin Bedayan reports, the Bangor School Department is expanding clinics to its middle schools and offering care to students of all ages.
Students are moving between classes at the James F. Dowdy School, stopping at their lockers and rushing past the unassuming entrance to the school's nearly complete health clinic. It's one of two new clinics at the district's two middle schools, built with the help of the city after the success of a clinic at the high school.
We have to really start rethinking what it is that we're doing and how we are supporting not only the whole child, but also families.
Marie Robinson is the superintendent of the Bangor School Department.
We're in a really challenging time. Families are busy, healthcare is challenging. So if we can support that access to families and students, we feel that it's very important.
The Bangor School Department is one of 18 districts across Maine that have at least one school-based health clinic. And as the district prepares to fully open the new middle school clinics, it highlights the effectiveness of the in-school model and the importance of easy access to physical and mental health care.
It's a key piece of the learning process, because if children aren't healthy or need health care and aren't able to access it, it ultimately impacts their ability to learn. So we're really working hard to reduce those barriers.
At the heart of the issue is the many logistical steps it takes to get a student to the doctor. Parents need to take time off of work, get the child from school, and then the appointment itself. That's a lot of class time missed, even if students return to school afterwards, which isn't a given. And that's before factoring in Maine's challenging healthcare landscape, where long wait times could mean families are traveling even further to get to the doctor.
The ripple effect is, it goes wide. I think being able to cut that down, I know families are very appreciative of it.
The in-school clinic simplifies much of the process. Students don't need to leave the building or worry about drive time, ensuring that a 30-minute appointment really only takes 30 minutes, not all afternoon. And families have been excited to get on board with the program, says Brendan Miller, family nurse practitioner at the high school clinic.
They have loved the convenience of being able to either bring their kid in, or if their kid's already at school, they can. We just call and get permission, and then we see them, and the parent doesn't have to leave work, and the student can go back to their class.
Parents consent to their children utilizing the clinic and can attend appointments in person, or staff will call parents before and after to keep them up to date. While a school nurse manages medications and coordinates care for students with chronic conditions, the in-school clinic functions like a walk-in express care, testing and treating viral symptoms, and providers can refer students to other doctors in their system. They can also fill in for a primary care physician for things like sports physicals, Miller says, a key service when those doctors are in high demand.
A lot of their actual primary care providers are so full that they can't even get them in for their yearly physicals to do the sports physicals, so it has been much faster to get in through us.
Peekaboo Mower, a licensed clinical social worker, works at the middle school offering mental health counseling at the clinic. She says that working with young students can help them ease the transitions of middle school. And physically being in the school removes some of the barriers, she says, helping her work directly with the school to find the best time in a student's schedule to meet.
School staff, I try to work with them as best as I can because mine are reoccurring, so every week we're going to meet. So I try to meet with them during a study hall or during like a free period, so it's like least disruptive to their education.
It's especially helpful at this age, Mower says, as students themselves worry about missing class.
They're starting at this age to get into, if I miss school, I'm behind on my work and I'm going to fail and my parents are going to be upset with me and I'm not going to be able to play sports or whatever it is that in their life. So this cuts that out a lot.
Mower has already started meeting with students this year, and the finishing touches to the physical clinic space will wrap up in the coming weeks. A successful example of the in-school model for other districts around the state. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
Maine transportation officials say that undeveloped land on Sears Island remains the best place to build an offshore wind port. A lengthy new report from the Maine DOT supports the state's rejection of the nearby Mack Point Terminal in Searsport as an alternative site for the facility, but some project opponents say they feel blindsided by the study's unannounced release. Peter McGuire has more.
The 107-page alternatives analysis says that siting a port on Mack Point would be too expensive, complicated, and environmentally harmful, as compared to its preferred site on Sears Island. The report estimates that Sears Island would cost about $525 million to construct, versus $614 million to retrofit the terminal owned by Sprague Energy. In addition, building on Sears Island would avoid the need for dredging, a top environmental concern, and the state would avoid having to pay tens of millions of dollars to rent the terminal or relocate a private rail line there. Department Deputy Director Matt Byrne says the analysis is the first stage in thorough state and federal environmental reviews of the project.
It's far from, you know, a rubber stamp or anything like that. It's a detailed document that has a tremendous amount of information in it.
Governor Janet Mills says Maine is in a prime spot to build a port and capitalize on the development of floating wind turbines in the Gulf of Maine. But the Sears Island proposal is opposed by some conservation groups who say it will disturb undeveloped land. Friends of Sears Island Vice President Rolf Olson, who champions the Mack Point option, says he was disappointed the state submitted its analysis without informing stakeholders.
This is yet another example of a process that has not been open and transparent.
The department is now drafting a broader environmental impact analysis of the Sears Island project, and Maine may soon learn if it will be awarded a $456 million federal grant to help build the port. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
Christine Logan, the executive director of the Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority, is stepping down as lawmakers renew calls for the organization to be reformed. State Representative Dan Enkeles of Brunswick, who had called for Logan's resignation in the wake of the toxic firefighting foam spill in August, says it does provide some level of accountability, but
it still leaves the problem of making sure we shut down the foam on Hangar 6, and it still leaves a very large responsibility for policymakers, especially legislators, to pass what we need to pass to make sure that all of the foam is removed from Brunswick Landing, and ideally statewide.
Enkeles says the next MIRA director should have both economic development and environmental cleanup expertise. The state Senate voted yesterday to confirm Governor Janet Mills' nominee to lead Maine's largest agency, the Department of Health and Human Services. Kevin Miller reports.
Sarah Gagne-Holmes was approved by a vote of 24-8 during a special confirmation session at the State House. She's been serving as acting commissioner at DHHS since June, but now takes over an agency facing numerous challenges. More than 24 nursing homes have closed in Maine over the past decade. Finding childcare is a struggle for many families, and lawmakers have been investigating child welfare programs at DHHS for several years now, following multiple high-profile deaths. Gagne-Holmes said after the vote that she is ready to dive into those challenges.
Those issues are one of my top priorities, or are my top priorities. Definitely want to continue to strengthen the child welfare system, continue to work collaboratively with stakeholders to improve the services that we provide. Child care obviously is critical to the economy of the state, and we're working hard to improve those services. Long-term care, aging in place, those are all issues.
Gagne-Holmes previously served as deputy commissioner at DHHS for 5 years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
A former fire chief from Waterville has been appointed as the new state fire marshal. Sean Essler of Albion was present in the Maine State Senate chamber yesterday as Senate President Troy Jackson announced the unanimous vote to confirm him.
Chair is very pleased to recognize in the rear of the chamber our new fire marshal, Chief Sean Essler. Would he please rise and accept the greetings and congratulations of the Maine Senate.
During his confirmation hearing last month, Essler pledged to address concerns that have surfaced about a hostile work environment within the fire marshal's office. His predecessor, Richard McCarthy, retired this summer. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us for Weekend Edition tomorrow morning at 8 with Carol Bousquet. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.